try and be different. We've got a gym, we've got a sauna, we've got an ice bar. We're trying to create that wellness kind of.
Just sitting up for a podcast with Dale Cheeseman, the Melbourne builder. Real interesting business. So he's in the renovation business. He's been niching into the event space, so he does heaps of stuff like the Australian Open, Ferrari. He's done some super high-end jobs, so it's going to be really cool to talk with him, talk about business processes, wins, losses. We're just down here in Melbourne for the next 3 days, just speaking to a whole heap of guys, so enjoy this podcast. Comment below if you've done some work with him or if you know Dale. It would be awesome to see, so look forward to this podcast.
My name's Dale Cheeseman. I'm the co-director of the Melbourne Builder.
Sweet.
And we've been building, we've had our company for 15 years.
Nice.
And I was an apprentice for 4 years and kind of did my own thing for a year before I joined into a partnership and started the business.
Yeah, nice. How long, apprenticeship basis, you grew up in Melbourne?
Yes.
Yep. Cool. Found one builder. Did you do your whole apprenticeship with one guy?
Yep. Yeah, he's pretty old school.
Yeah, nice.
Really small builder. And he was kind of a father figure.
Yep.
I was 19, but I was a bit lost. I think the apprenticeship straightened you up pretty quickly.
Yeah, man.
I wasn't a rebel, but, you know, just learnt all the basics of driving trucks and reversing trailers and getting in and digging and, you know, getting my hands dirty. Mm. So
yeah, I feel like 9 hours on the tools every day or 9 or 10 hours, you don't really want to do too much mischief after hours, do you?
Nah, not at
and
all.
And the weekends you're probably just trying to catch up on sleep.
Definitely. Yeah. The early mornings is definitely a shock to the system. And I think that's the first year of your apprenticeship is those early wake ups. So yeah.
For sure. What kind of, when you were doing your apprenticeship, like predominantly what kind of work were you doing the whole time?
Yeah, we were doing renovations, but my boss was old school in the sense that he went through a couple of recessions through his apprenticeship and his business.
Yeah.
So we did a lot ourselves, bricklaying, all the foundations.
Nice. Tied your own steel, did your own block.
Did everything. And it was great for me because I got to learn everything, but I probably... At the end of it, I wasn't a great carpenter because I hadn't hung multiple doors and did that kind of stuff. But I think I got to understand when to inject a trade and when not to, because obviously speed falls down when you're trying to do everything yourself. Yep. So I did learn a lot of things not to do, but also like the fact that I got to learn a whole range of things and especially joinery. We did our own joinery. So my fourth year, I did three kitchens for three townhouses on my own and learning to do your whole cutting lists and everything from scratch. And that was, I mean, look at it now, what joinery is compared to when I was doing in my fourth year. We were ironing edge tape on. So, I was lucky to learn a whole range of things.
Yeah. Interesting you say about, nowadays there's probably more specialist sub-trades coming in and doing, I had one company hit me up. Hey, we just install door hardware for commercial projects.
Yeah, wow.
My first question is, cool, you guys must be super fast and efficient at what you do. My next question is, how the hell do you have enough work to, you know, if you go and hang 80 door handles, like I think it was in fire doors.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you have so much work, man?
But you're right, though. Like, because I suppose it's very hard to do door handles, for example.
Man.
So
yeah.
I can see how specialty trades can.
Yeah.
Can survive.
But in the moment, in any time of downturn or it's like you're the first one to go, man.
Definitely. Yeah, commercially maybe, yeah.
Yeah. So you did was it a 4-year apprenticeship for you? All in Melbourne?
Yep, in Melbourne. Yep.
Sweet.
4 years.
Got signed off. And then what was your kind of next steps after that?
I stayed with my boss for a little bit. And then I think I just had to leave home as such and go and see the real world.
Nice.
And understand quoting, understand the whole thing of business and doing time management.
It's a whole another kettle of fish, eh? There's being great on the tools and then there's like project management, quoting, sales, money.
Marketing.
Everything, man. Yeah. So how long, were you working for yourself at that stage?
Yeah, so we just did a couple of months and then Sean, my business partner, he finished his apprenticeship. He was doing Simmons Homes, Metricon, lots of lockups, fixes, that bulk carpentry.
Bulk housing stuff,
So we found it found it really good for about 2 years, 3 years. We just the two of us, and I think we got an apprentice on a few years in, or a couple of years in.
Yeah.
But yeah, we made some good money. We got in. Sean's a very fast and good carpenter, yep. So I learned a lot.
Yeah.
2 years out.
Yeah.
You know, you think you know it, but you don't.
Yeah.
And I polished up my carpentry skills.
Nice.
But my one was networking, and I had a lot of friends and family that wanted to do decks and pergolas, and off it went from there.
Yeah, so, sweet. Yeah. So was he more like that partnership? He was more the builder on the tools, making sure timelines were hit.
Yep.
You were sales, marketing, all the businessy stuff.
Yeah, so you'd start to like go and meet someone and things like that. That's probably when our apprentice came on board. Yep. So because you need to work in twos, working solo, and that's what Sean was struggling with, working by himself was really hard.
Yeah.
Going to meetings and sales and doing your quotes. And then the biggest one for us is doing my Cert 4.
Yep.
I chose to do it on a Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
I was a bit slack to try and get out of work.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wasn't doing it on weekends. No one does. Everyone talks about doing it.
Yeah.
So for me, I just smashed it out in like a couple of month block, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then got a tutorer to get me through.
Sweet.
To fine tune that.
Can you go for a little bit more what Cert 4 is, what it means, how long it takes, and what it gives you at the end?
Cert 4 is just a certificate, really. Okay. I did it at an association and I didn't rate it. It wasn't that good. I learned more in 3 days with a quick workshop from my tutorer than I did in 2 months.
Yes.
It's just a money-making scheme, I feel.
Yeah, man. Oh, same.
Too many. Yeah.
Too many people clipping the ticket along the way. I think the old, I don't want to slag off.
I might be wrong here, but when I did get my license 10 years ago, you didn't need your Cert 4.
Okay,
like that's, cool. I think everyone thought you did.
Yeah.
But you just need to be qualified enough to be capable of building and getting your ticket. So you didn't need your Cert 4.
Do you know what the cost of that is now to get a Cert 4?
No, I wouldn't have a clue.
No.
I wouldn't remember what I paid for it now.
Yeah, okay. So when you're with your business partner, explain, because people always love to know how you get your first jobs, et cetera, et cetera. How did your partner have those existing connections with the bigger companies? Were you just rolling off that?
Yeah, so he had some supervisors
that
he was quite friendly with Simmons and Metricon and those ones, and we did a good job. So that we were getting put on their displays and things like that.
Yeah.
But our first job, we had a guy was seeing our work and wanted his house renovated. So we did own a builder with one guy. And then the whole school that his kids went to, we started renovating for everyone in the school.
Yeah, nice, man.
And that's just the word of mouth and
And
getting trust from different clients. Mm.
Yeah, it is, man. I think if you can do a good job, there's so much power in the old word of mouth.
Oh, but definitely.
Also, if you're looking to grow and expand, like marketing is a whole nother channel way.
Yeah.
So how long were you doing the group house building stuff for? Give us the outlay of, like, say, the next sort of 5 years, what you guys were doing after that.
So we got to a point where we're doing so many owner builder stuff that we obviously needed our builder's ticket to go or to market, to put your phone number out there. Like, not a lot of people are doing owner builder. So that's where we started losing projects to builders.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be there trying to tell them not to go with a builder, to go with owner builder. But we're contradicting ourselves a little bit. So
can you just elaborate just on owner builder stuff? That might be a term people aren't familiar
with. Right. So that in Melbourne, it's a homeowner that goes and gets the permit and is the builder.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we're working. So we've got no responsibility.
Yeah.
But we were running the jobs like a fixed contract, and so we were organising the trades.
Okay, so would that be like the owner builder gets the, they do the design, the council application, and then they just come to you, stamp DA plans, boom.
As a carpenter.
So, I see. But you're still full contract, organising materials.
We were back then. It's technically, it's a grey area. It's illegal to do it.
Crazy.
You know, you should have a license. You should be a licensed carpenter doing that stuff.
Because who takes on the insurance responsibility there?
The owner.
Yeah. Oh, so you guys just come in and...
Yeah.
Yes, wait.
Yeah, but there's only a life. Like, there's a limit to that.
Yeah.
So that's where... But you had to go... That was my experience from in building to be able to go and get my license too. So most people do it under a builder.
Yeah.
We were just out on our own, doing good jobs for good people.
Yeah, cool, man. So what kind of, at what timeline was this? How big was the business with you and your mate?
We had probably there's four of us.
Yeah. You know,
we'd call in some subbies if we got busy.
Yeah. And how many jobs at a time were you sort of chipping through?
Probably two. Yeah. We had two Renaults running at one stage.
Decent sized Renaults.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
200K plus kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Back then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was pretty big.
Yeah. Nice. And then from
double
those.
Story.
Yeah. Double. Yeah. And then from those kind of jobs, I mean, were you picking up, were you always sliding in smaller jobs, maintenance-y stuff, or were you always staying?
Yeah. We were doing decks, pergolas. We had Jeff was lending us out his factory, my old boss, sorry.
Nice.
We were doing some wardrobes and a couple little kitchens here and there. So we were being really diverse. We were taking on anything and just growing that network, really. Yeah.
Man, there's so much power in picking up small stuff, eh? When I first started, I just dove into the SEO game, the maintenance stuff, started off with hotel maintenance. And I literally figured out, like, every 10 jobs, the job value under $5,000, you would get like a $50,000 renovation.
Yeah,
so I was just like, if you can just pump out volume really, really well. But the process that I found was super hard, or like a good learning curve was, you know, meeting a client, booking in a site visit, sending a detailed quote, dealing with the emotions of the client, seeing a 3-day job through, getting really, really good at that, getting a Google review, boom, that's like the biggest thing. Social proof, and then off that, you know, you get one of their friends ring up and say, hey, you did, you know, you changed 12 weatherboards really, really well. Yeah. Can you renovate our kitchen bathroom into a deck? And you're like, oh, God, I did a small job super well, and then you're getting a huge...
Yeah, that's what happened with us.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So where is your business at now, and how are you guys operating?
The rundown? Yeah, it's grown a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. We're doing big renovations now, like in with the big boys.
Yeah,
We only tend to try and do 2, 3, 4 a year,
okay,
depending on the size.
What are we talking job value?
Millions.
Million plus,
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So you're not changing any rotten weatherboards at the moment?
No. I would love to go back to
that. Yeah. Probably a lot less stress.
Big jobs, big problems.
Mm.
And then we've got our event side, which do a lot of major events in Melbourne, which is, you know, Spring Carnival and...
Yeah, cool.
The Arbury Afloat down on the Yarra.
Yeah.
Tennis,
sweet.
Grand Prix, we're just finishing Ferrari Marquee at the moment. So, yeah.
I'm a massive tennis fan. I came over for the Aussie Open. If I'm not here, I'm literally on a tennis court. what's the event side?
The event side's just crazy. It's just a limited time. With the government, they give, you know, these events rent the space as such.
Yeah.
So they've only got this land for only a certain amount of time. So,
yeah.
The Grand Prix, we've had 8 days to build a massive marquee.
Okay.
But there's a lot of pre-planning. That's where our joinery, we've got a joinery company.
Okay, it makes sense now.
And that's where our joinery kind of piggybacks off that and helps go along, yeah.
How did you get your first contact with that? That's quite it's pretty niche.
Through friends. We started with the Arbory, and then we went to the Meyer Marquee, which was in 2016 in the VRC, Victorian Racing Club, for the Melbourne Cup Carnival.
Yeah.
And, it was you just learn on the go, and pricing was really hard because it's not as like a renovation. It's very heavy carpentry.
Yeah.
And that's where our machines and things come into play with the joinery, with our CNC machine.
Yeah. So a job, say the Grand Prix is it on this weekend?
Yep.
Starts this weekend?
Yep.
How many months of pre-planning and construction is it?
Pre-planning, we're probably on meetings 6 weeks out.
Yeah, okay.
We're starting to build a week before we get on site. So it's been a two-week. The boys worked over the 1 week. Sorry. I think I saw like on a timesheet like 90 hours or something. Like they get to the end and they're cooked.
Yeah. Is that stuff all fixed price, charge up? Do you price all that?
Yep.
Yeah. So are you the one doing all the pricing in the business?
No. Yeah, we've got there's two with our business. The renovation side has we all intertwine with each other and help each other out.
Yeah.
But there's predominantly the renovations, the joinery, and the event side that
Man, that's run a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's good to be diverse, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
When COVID hit, our event side kind of stopped. So we really lent on joinery and renovations that boomed.
Yeah.
And then now, you know, events are booming. The construction industry is going a bit slow.
Yeah.
We've got our couple of renovations and we're happy.
Yeah, nice.
I think that's good about being diverse.
Yeah, 100%.
But I think with building too, I think being a builder is really tough. Like, you know, you're working off small margins, as you know.
Yeah.
So to have a different, have a little bit of a niche, whether it's you're running a big carpentry crew, that so it's essentially you've got a carpentry business as well. Or for us, we're probably, we've got a joinery business. So we're trying to take more of the pie as such.
Yeah.
And I see builders that have got pool businesses or landscaping arm. I do think you need to have one more
niche business on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the building game is so, it is really hard. I think it's, I also think it's a real dog eat dog industry. Yeah. Like, I'd love to talk more about, the Melbourne stuff after this. But yeah, I think you do need to have something niche. I think it's always good for, I don't know if you would say if it's like provides a good like lifestyle, but it can kind of, if you can use the cash flow or the financials from a good building business, you can kind of set something up on the side. Yeah, seems hard. What have you seen recently in the Melbourne sort of space in regards to the market, say now versus 2 to 3 years ago?
Well, I liken it to a cup of coffee. You know, we were paying $3.50 for a cup of coffee. Now we're paying sometimes $5.50, $6.
Yeah, man.
that's what's happening in the building industry.
Yeah.
People weren't accepting it, or clients weren't accepting it, that it had gone up so much. And, you know, back when you paid $6 for a coffee, you wouldn't have gone back to that cafe.
Yeah. Now it's the norm, man.
Now it's the norm. and people are, clients are starting to understand that is what it is. So I see it starting to pick up again with people, because what happened is clients would engage an architect, go through the design phase for a year, go out to tender 3 months later. So we're already 15 months down the track, and then they're getting prices back 16 months later. And that's where they couldn't, that's where the big gap was.
Yeah, market changes can change a lot over a year and a half.
Yeah, so every project was over budget.
Yeah.
Every project. So then you're going through 3 months of cost cutting, and then the documentation's just, poor old architects are trying to draw lines over lines, and so it is getting messy. And then I've seen even tenders, you know, three builders go for a tender is awarded to a builder, and then it still doesn't go ahead. You know, through the cost cutting phases where the clients are saying, hey, we might hold off on this for another year.
Yeah.
Interest rates, that's where it probably is killing people.
Yeah. Within your business, because another thing I'm real big on our Instagram, and that is trying to help people not quote for free, because it is such like a, I mean, you need so much skill and experience to price. Like, that you, if you're a builder, you don't know how to price at the end of your apprenticeship. You need like 2 to 5 years of experience.
Yeah.
When you guys get an inquiry, how do you deal with like new leads, pre-qualification?
Yep. I don't like to, if someone's coming to me that aren't going to a tender, I can smell a rat.
Yeah.
And if I think it's someone decent or it's friends of a friend, I'll say to them if they can pay the QS fee. So,
Cool.
You know, whatever you're charging me, I just pass that on to them and say, this is the quote from my QS.
Yeah.
If you would like to proceed with it, you know, sweet. I might waste half a day on it.
That's
essentially
it. Yeah,
it's rough numbers.
Yeah.
My time's free, but that's how I get around that. I charge for the QS.
Sweet. Out of say 10 clients that come to you, how many would like on average go ahead with the QS fee? Ballpark.
I'm probably sifting through them, but probably 50%. Yeah, a lot of them A lot of them do go ahead, because they can see, like, if it's, I don't know, I'm not sure what you could charge, but depending on how in depth you want to go, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000
about the same
for a client isn't too bad to get a reading of where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, a million dollar renovation, we'd probably be sitting anywhere 1,800 to 2.2 for decent high-level takeoff.
Which for a client, they're going to get that back even if they don't go with me. The power, like the information you've got is power.
Yeah. And do you say to them, you have this data. If you don't have to go with me, you can use this as a negotiation for your next builder? Sweet.
Yeah.
So out of those 50% that will pay the QS fee, what are you sort of seeing on how many of those jobs are going ahead at the moment? We'll say last 12 months.
Again, probably half.
Yeah, so 50%.
Look, definitely the prices coming back are scaring people off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard someone, an insurance company that I was, a guy I was speaking to around builder's insurance and warranty insurance, that you know, we have to apply to get more, a bigger range in our home warranty insurance. And the renovation prices have doubled,
yeah,
but our insurance hasn't. So that's where they're doing some studies on a project 3 years ago to now.
Yeah.
And they're saying that they're seeing anywhere from like 60 to 80% increase, which I don't see that.
Yeah.
But I do think it's, as we were saying about the cup of coffee, I do think it's up around the 40, 50% from 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find yourself, obviously you guys are pretty well established here, do you guys sort of roughly know who you're kind of tendering against for the next couple of jobs?
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Catch up with them at the local pub every Friday? No.
I've never done that. Definitely not. But, you do know who's tendering, but I think it's, everyone's kind of doing the same, especially more people are using QSs, I suppose, or they've got their own systems in pricing.
Mm.
Prelims, that's going to be the one that's going to be different to all builders.
Yeah.
Profit margin is going to be different to all builders.
Mm.
But everything in between, maybe carpentry might be a bit different with all builders. But your Sparkies, your plumbers, your plasterers, your bricklayers, tilers, joinery, they all should be around about the same.
Yeah.
So it will probably come down to presentation on how you put your tender in.
Mm.
I try and show them my timeline, my schedule.
Yeah. That can sort of separate you a little bit, eh?
Provide
a bit of a gang chart kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just sweet. Real rough. But they can see, hey, he's gonna start in March and he's saying he's gonna finish in March next year or whatever it is.
Yeah,
they can kind of see that I'm real and I've looked at it a little bit further. And only recently I've started putting in trade references because I just think that, what I've found, especially in Melbourne, there's been unfortunately a few builders going under that the clients are very nervous about entering into a contract with any builder, myself, anyone. So I've been starting to provide a trade list and I've got letters off my trades telling them how often I'm paying them.
Oh, when you say trades, so you're just giving them a list of, say, your painters, plasterers, plumbers.
I've had a few letters off my trades I put them in my tendering package saying that, you know, my plumber says he's been working with me for X amount of years and he's paid me in, 14 days.
Yeah, that's real good. Real good. Like you call that social proof? Just knowing, hey, these guys.
I'm just trying to give them a bit more. Give the clients a bit more of an understanding that we're healthy.
Yeah. Would you say that's like a common question from clients now? Like, how do they word that? Are you not going to go under?
Well, that's it. How do you word it?
I
get frustrated because I think that the contracts are quite heavily weighted into the owner's favour.
Yeah, man.
So, we're always trying to justify ourselves. But I think when we're lucky, we're in demand. So I'm able to kind of say, hey, look after us too. And this is how I want my payments. And this is how it's going to go. Yeah.
Would you say with like guys going under, do you think that's just coming down to like, I don't know, cowboys that aren't as good? Like, do you sort of see it as somewhat of a good thing? It is bad because it's bad news, bad media.
It's good for me to pick up trades and staff.
Yeah.
There wasn't too many builders in our league, in our blue chip suburbs.
Yeah.
I just think that it was a hangover from COVID. Like, it was tough. It was really tough. And then if you're not getting your next job and the deposits and a few fall over.
Yeah, man.
That's where it probably will catch up. And that's what we're probably seeing.
Yeah. What were a couple of examples of you guys through COVID? Like, did you have a lot of fixed price contracts at that time?
Yeah.
How did you manage those?
Yeah. I'm a deep thinker. I'm constantly listening to money news just lots of random stuff. I think with COVID, I sensed that it was going to be tough and I started getting phone calls of people pulling out of big contracts.
Clients?
Yep.
That you had sort of
locked away. And that was when the world was falling apart in 2020 March. You know, everyone didn't know what was going on. I didn't know whether I was going to be paying my mortgage or what. But I just, there was a few jobs that architects hit me up with, which I would normally say are too small for us.
Yeah.
And I just tendered. And like, I had someone, a mentor of mine that, that's not in the building game that said, if you want to make more money, quote more.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I just quoted all these little things. When I say little, it's 500,000, 700,000.
Still decent size.
Still decent size Renaults. Yeah. And we won them.
Yeah.
Even one was like two bathrooms and a laundry or something.
Sheesh,
like that.
I hope that wasn't 500 grand.
No, it was, but it was high end.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
And we were in Melbourne. We went down, like, it was pretty harsh through lockdown. We went down to five per site. So we were lucky to really be, five was too many on these sites.
Yeah.
So we got through pretty well unscathed. And our joinery, just like, people were sitting at home wanting new wardrobes.
Yeah, looking at laundry, their kitchen cabinetry. Yeah, we'll refresh that. So, so how do you kind of manage all your in-house staff versus guys on site, if we can just discuss that?
We're pretty lean in the office. We probably do need some help in the admin side of things. Yep. We all try and do our own admin. I'm still across a lot of the accounts and things like that.
Yep.
I've just got my mum in. She retired and came back. So it's good to have someone you really trust.
Yep.
But from on site, we try and do a project. We have a project manager, got a couple of apprentices. So we need to bulk up that carpentry renovation side.
Yeah.
Our events, we run off contractors a lot.
So just pull subbies in. I suppose it's only...
Yeah, it's just not any subbies. We've got a core group of subbies that have been with us for a very long time.
Nice.
Paying them quickly helps.
Yeah.
And then our joinery side, we've got six, seven, eight maybe.
Full-time in a workshop.
Yeah, nice. So in the office there, drawing and things like that. So we're probably... We go from 20 to 30 staff
at fluctuate. Any one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty big business, eh?
Yeah.
How long has it been that big for?
Look, it grows every year.
Yeah.
I always say, like, you just can't get away from growth.
Yeah.
Growth is a healthy thing.
Yeah, it's good. Organic. If you're not growing,
I just think you've got to, like, at the same time, you're holding the handbrake and you're just letting it off a little bit.
Yeah.
Because if you just bang, go, ramp it right up, I think you lose control.
Yeah.
So doing it organically, we've been able to get the right management in place.
Nice. How strict are you on like the hiring process and how do you go about that? Because new staff, new subbies.
Yeah.
Man, that's risky. Eh?
Yeah, I don't want any bad eggs. Yep. Definitely. We've been really lucky in our 15 years. We've had some great people come through. Obviously, you know, people leave and go on to off to different things. But I always say that they've... at the Melbourne Builder, they've been able to go through a year or two of growth and they've helped us grow.
Yeah.
And then we're off to, you know, potentially someone more skilled or whatever it is.
Yeah.
We do go through some staff, but
yeah. Oh, I think it's natural for everyone.
Yeah.
And you've got to try before. I mean, some people might not fit into your kind of culture or work environment. And man, yeah, building is a hard gig as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Culture is what you mentioned there is a big thing. I played a lot of team sports, footy and things like that. So I probably run
AFL. Business.
Local.
Okay.
But local footy, you know, I was involved in the club for years and years and leadership and, you know, just working together, always trying to improve. Even if you won the game by 100 points, you're always looking at what you did wrong.
Absolutely.
So that's my mentality. I'm always trying to improve the business, but at the same time, I'm trying to create a really good culture.
Yeah.
I try and be different. We've got a gym, we've got a sauna, we've got a nice bath. We're trying to create that wellness kind of space, which is a real passion of mine.
Is everyone going to 4:45 a.m. run clubs as well?
No, run clubs.
That's taken off at the moment.
Really?
I don't know. Right. I got tagged by someone on Instagram and then I looked through the 4:45 run club and they've got them in like London and Auckland. It's all over Aussie and it's... Oh,
no, I'm not an early riser like that.
What do you do once you're done at 5:45? I suppose go to work, but yeah.
Now the wellness space is really good and we've noticed like our managers, like it's bloody stressful building. Mm. It really is. You're copying it from clients. You've got that psychology mindset of, you know, dealing with outside noise and then you've got to deal with trades.
Yeah.
I see, you know, my staff, my management come in broken sometimes.
Yeah, it's tough.
And just to be able to go downstairs and jump in a sauna or an ice bath for an hour, they come out brand new.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Mm. So, you've obviously got the office, you built all that. And then do you guys have like weekly meetings, weekly breakfasts? Like how does the...
So we do monthly breakfasts.
Okay.
Because sometimes you don't get to see, with 20 or 30 staff, you don't get big. To see them. So we do first Friday of every month.
Yeah.
We do a massive Christmas party and the biggest one is our Easter party that's coming up next week.
Yeah. What does that entail?
Band, pizza oven, beer on tap, jumping castle. Like, we try and go all out.
That's cool.
Yeah, try and include the families and
And
yeah, try and like a lot of I'm going through. I've got three kids, so nice. I know how hard it is. You want to be present with your kids, but you're also running a business. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Does your partner help within the business at all?
No, she's got her own business.
Oh man, yeah. How do you guys have time together?
Oh mate, it's yeah, time management's a big thing.
Yeah.
Big thing. But I think you like what I do now, my daily routine is so different to what I did 5 years ago and 5 years before that. I think you just go and it might be my routine would be different in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
At the moment I try and get up at 6.
Nice.
Smash out all my admin as much as I can. And then I'm dropping the kids off to school and things like that, and then trying to get out to site or manage my days, make sure I've got an office day where I don't book in any meetings and things like that.
Nice. Yep. What are some differences? Like, how have you learned that? Did someone teach you? And like, what are your kind of like day-to-day differences between now and 5 years ago?
I need more help on time management. Yep. That's my weakness.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely. But I think you just got to, you know, I have to find time and find blocks that I can sit down and really get into work.
It's really hard, eh? Because I feel like if I'm a big one of do not disturb or not airplane mode because I want to know what's come through. But it's really hard when you're doing a task and then you get interrupted and it's more like your mental space. Mm. Like people will think, oh, it's only a 2 minute phone call. Mm. But it's like when you're in like deep work mode and you get broken on your mental, it's definitely.
I'm big on a notepad. I like anyone that isn't using a notepad. When you go out to a restaurant and you order a meal and the waitress doesn't take your...
Does that put you off, does it?
It puts me off, yeah. From being a male, I just can't...
Yeah.
It's just hard to multitask.
And, yeah, man. I send myself voice notes or emails.
Yeah, right.
I'll flick myself an email.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a big one as well. Are you open discussing some rate stuff around Melbourne and that at the moment?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty... Yeah. People love knowing about rates. So we priced up some duplex townhouses for a guy a couple of weeks ago. We came in at around... It was pretty high end. I don't know exactly where it is. We were sort of sitting around 3.2, 3.4 a square metre. He said, this is way too high. I'm building for 2.1 a square.
No, in my space.
Yeah. And we were like... Yeah, we couldn't believe it. And then we were like, is this why people are going under, or is this so much like cookie cutting or people, you know, undercutting? Know. Like, what do you guys would be in the, 5,000 plus?
Six and a half.
Yeah, pretty standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your, like, what are you seeing in regards of like builders rates? What do you guys contract out at if you
are discussing that? So we're open book quoting.
Yeah.
Like we try and show our margins and things like that.
Yeah.
I've always worked off a 15 to 20% margin.
That's good, yeah.
I think 20% is probably too high on the bigger stuff.
Yeah. And just on the money stuff, I feel like it's such a... Some people get real weirded out and it's a taboo like discussion. I'm like... You need to make money to be in business.
Mm.
And if you're not making money, you're in the range of going under.
Mm.
So it's like if clients push you so cheap, it's like we could have an issue in 6 months.
Yeah, and it also makes it believable too.
Yeah.
Like if you're showing everything, it's like you're not hiding anything.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's where the clients are really happy to move forward with you because they can see it all down on paper and there's no like hidden costs or anything like that. I get frustrated with trades that you get a 10-page document and you're just flicking through all these pictures and whatever.
Bullshit.
And then you get down to the back and there's all these different pricings and add-ons and I spend 2 hours then trying to put it in an Excel spreadsheet trying to work out what the price is.
Yeah.
So my advice to trades is just use Excel. Send one page.
Yeah, man.
And just be transparent and show, even like, I don't care if your margin's 100%.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't show me what the price is. I've just got to get that information over to the client.
Yeah, for sure. Do you find your clients are blown away when they see a QS report with 400 line items?
They're
pretty impressed.
But you find a lot, do you use Excel?
I'm only using Excel. Yeah.
So I find that like 80% of, maybe not 80%, but 80% of people, I think, know an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to read.
Yeah. So it's so good, man.
Yeah.
I just, Yeah, we do. We'll do an Excel spreadsheet, and then when we submit for a builder, we'll put their logo on it and put it into like a nice PDF. But we always send two documents off. But yeah, people will go, oh, your price is a lot higher, but the detail, we can see the detail now. And I feel like when you can see detail, like you said, there's no hiding of anything.
Well, it's a shopping list for them as well. So when they say, oh, how can we get the price down? It's like, well, turn the page over. You tell me what you want to take out.
So
it's very easy to then put it back on the architect or the client.
Do you guys do much, I've had this conversation with a few people, like a client comes to you with an idea, will you work through with them with the architect through the design process, or do you prefer just to get the plans?
We had a design arm of the in-house business. I just let that go last year.
Any reasons?
Too much emotion.
Mm.
It was taking a lot of my time up for not much reward. It was the first time I had to make a business decision. I was really passionate about it. That's why I started it, because I wanted to see people get a really cost-effective renovation. With no stuff arounds, or I just saw too many people going over their budgets before they'd started building.
But time.
Three kids. And that's where I was saying, like, I had to concentrate on the renovation side. That was the bulk of the business.
Did you hire someone full-time for that role?
I did. And in the end, he's just gone out on his own now. Done his own thing. Good mates with him.
Nice.
Still try and handball him some work. But I just don't want to know what's,
You'd rather just get those plans back and then just go from there? Fair enough. Do you think, in my opinion, I feel like by the time, and well, I'm not blaming architects, but architects will give a figure to a client at, you know, first stage, concept stage, working drawing stage. Then by the time the builder gets it, huge number.
So that's where I'm finding some architects that are learning about QSs, good QSs, are starting to go, why aren't we getting these guys in real early?
At the early stages,
And paying $1,000 to get a really basic...
concept takeoff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you think not enough people are doing it?
They're learning to do it.
I think that's a big reason why so many projects don't go ahead, or it can make the architect look bad. You know, they go and do all this nice work that's going to fit the Instagram page, but then by the time it comes out, they're like, man, you guys have strung us along the whole time. Probably paid $40,000 or $100,000.
I think my QS, half his work is for architects.
With your guys on site, how many builders do you have on the tools at the moment?
Carpenters,
apprentices, everything.
Eight.
Okay. And how do you run your team on like the carpentry side? Like one foreman, two builders?
One foreman. We probably don't have enough systems around there. We're still really navigating through that and trying to get the right personnel. Into those positions. We're looking to get a lead carpenter. To really take over that carpentry side. The one thing I've found going from $500,000, $1 million renovations to a couple of million dollars and further on, you can't have a carpenter running a site or a foreman. You need a site manager.
Site manager.
And then you need someone looking after the carpentry.
I see.
So that's the probably the hardest transition we've gone through is we grew, and you don't want to pay that big figure for a site manager.
What's the site manager figure at that? 150, 120?
No, I don't want to discuss that.
Okay. So, that's absolutely fine.
That taken out.
That's cool.
That's the hardest bit. Like, again, playing footy, what's he getting per game?
That's absolutely fine. Brendan, cut that bit out. because that was my biggest struggle as well. I had enough work for two teams of two, but I was still project managing like the guys, but it was really hard to keep up with sales. And then trying to find someone to project manage, I had to find someone on like an incentive related budget because
it's hard.
If you've just got someone on hours, you're like, man, are you still at home at 9 o'clock or are you out and about? Like,
and that's where, you know, I'm not a really hard manager. I like to, hopefully I really put it back on the managers running their own sites. I don't know. I just try and be different.
Yeah.
I really do. I try and be different. I we put a coffee machine on site
nice.
A couple of weeks ago. So the boys are getting around that. And we put one in the joinery factory, and I think they're all having competitions around coffee art. And
yep.
So I think just being a little bit a point of difference, I'm happy to spend a bit of money
yep.
back into that.
Into the business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. People love hearing about problems and stuff.
Yep.
Have you ever had a job go south, a client lose the plot, get too emotional halfway through?
Yeah, always.
How do you deal with that?
Always. It's very stressful.
Yeah,
like, man. I said, you know, the perfect world is getting great documentation, getting the plans, and just going to a schedule.
Yep.
Everyone knows what they're doing. Plans are the tradie's Bible, really. Like,
yep.
that's what we all go to. That's how we interpret them.
For sure.
And if it's too grey,
mm.
there could be five different ways of tiling something or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, problems. I mean, I'm pretty good with people.
Yeah, you come across very personable.
I'm diplomatic. I probably always think that clients always right.
Yeah.
But there is a point where you're like, hang on, you're not.
Am I getting walked over here?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's something that I've learned to
yep.
maybe, and that's probably been my staff have made me tougher.
Yeah,
definitely. Nice. Some of my staff a bit more in the background, going, "No, you've crossed the line here. You actually should stand up for yourself."
Yep.
So I'm always fair, because I think you always want to leave a job
on good terms.
Yeah. You know, you've not only do you hand the job over, you want to have photos. You want to potentially have a reference.
Yeah.
You might. A lot of clients want to walk through a job to see.
Yeah.
Using, so.
And you don't want old mate saying, "Nah, we had a bad fall and no one can come see this."
But you've got to remember too that, like, building or renovating is the most stressful thing for someone.
Yeah.
So stressful. Luckily enough, it's not too stressful with us, I hope.
Yeah.
But you're going to have those odd moments where you disagree and things like that. So it's about being fair.
Cool. 2 points there, but I want to try. If you can, I'd love to try get an example. Have you had an example of a job where you have broken even or lost money on a project?
I'm not one that, like, looks over numbers too much.
Yeah.
So I probably wouldn't know.
Okay.
Hard, but there has been times where I know.
Yeah.
That this one hasn't gone well.
Yeah. And what's kind of your takeaway from that? Stricter on pricing? Do you have, like, certain tags, or do you look at a job and you're like, I've had a bad experience here in the past?
I think it's about me not being strong enough at the start when the plans have been, like, we've gone through too many cost-cutting rounds.
Yeah, okay.
And those plans are really jumbled and we're not sure, and then they go to the site manager, and that window that was meant to be deleted, the site manager's ordered.
Oh, man.
Those types of
variations
things.
Variations and plans not getting updated.
Yep.
It might get updated on the electronic, but the new set on
site. The client saved a couple of thousand, 100,000, but we're getting cooked on the other end.
Yeah.
So they're probably the times. Yeah.
Okay. And then the other question I had, sorry, I was just taking some notes. Yeah. In regards to renovations and that being stressful, you would look at a job and be like, okay, cool, the client needs to move out of the house for this?
All of our clients.
All of them?
Yeah. Because especially when you finish the job, if you're doing defects, if you can do defects before they move in,
that's the dream.
You almost want
them to go away on holiday, come back, boom, done, walk in.
Because as soon as you're, and a lot of clients are like, we don't mind if you do the landscaping after we've moved in.
Yeah.
They hate you after a week. They're like, what? You know, you got a trade knocking on the door at 6:45 or, you know, they don't love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Defects, I feel, can be the ones where you really get on people's nerves.
Yeah.
Like, the house is done, but there's 47 stickers all over the house.
But not only that, you go in and then a trade will bump a wall or.
Oh, yeah, I know, man.
We had a glazier that, like, went through a wall. It doesn't end.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I get key stuff here. What's hardest trades in Melbourne to get people to come back to you quoting? What's the most difficult one at the moment?
Good question.
QSs?
That's all right. It's probably hard to get bricklayers.
Mm.
I'm quite loyal with my trades. I've used a lot of my trades for a very long time.
That's so key, eh?
I've got a few of my trades that just turn up and work on an hourly rate and get it done. And I've put in an allowance. Like I said before, I'm not hell bent on numbers. I'm not a freak.
I think it's good to be look at the numbers, but I also think, profit margins are important, but longevity of a business.
Yes.
Like, would you really try and ruin a client for $2,000 to $5,000 and you're thinking, I'll probably get a referral off them in 2 years. Mm. I'm going to be here for 40, you know?
Oh, the amount of money we've absorbed is crazy. But that's got us to where we are now.
Yeah, 100%.
And I look at trades that won't absorb something and put in a variation for, I had one that was like $200 when they had a contract for $30,000.
Let it
they
go.
Because they had to come back and fit a screw off or something. I'm like, just put it into the next job or
did
something.
Did you use invoice. Them on the next job?
No. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's got to be a way of the trades have to absorb some costs as well, because we all are to make our business grow further.
Yeah, it's a tough business, man. And, I think every builder's absorbed some costs to keep a client happy.
Like, yeah, definitely.
And if you're in if you're in their house for 12 months, man, and you've got 3 weeks to go, you just want to knock it out.
What I do try and do though is keep a spreadsheet on what you are absorbing and try and present that to them at the end of the job to say, hey, I know this is something that we probably can't charge you for, but just so you know, we have absorbed this much money.
Fair play.
And then it's easier to say then, oh, these are the variations that we've faced.
Mm.
Then, you know, again, you can sit down with them and be fair about it.
Yeah, cool. Last couple ones. What's your guys' pipeline like in Melbourne for the next 12 to 18 months? And how many inquiries are you sort of seeing at the moment?
Yep. I'm not actively looking for clients at the moment because we've got two big jobs.
Nice.
That will go all year and into next year potentially. Yeah, nice. So we're not actively looking, but I do notice that it's like I'm not getting a lot of architects calling me to tender.
Yeah.
But I'm not ringing them either. So yeah,
for sure. Are you sort of seeing more builders on the market looking for work at the moment?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we need to, if something needs to happen with the trades. Like obviously the trades are charging more and more and more over the last few years. That needs to, I am noticing more emails from Sparkies and plumbers and people like that, new business.
Looking for business.
Cold calling me and emailing me. So I like to think that is a good thing for a builder that we can start to, we just need prices to hold. We can't let them keep 100%, going.
Man.
And definitely carpenters. I think they're quite scarce at the moment.
Yeah.
Trying to get carpenters on wages is really, really hard.
Everyone wants to do the contract model.
Yeah. And I think that there's a bit of a pyramid scheme going on there you know, you've got your labor hire type setups that have got these bulk carpenters under them and, you know, everyone's making a little clip here and there.
Yeah. It's very hard to go direct to the person instead of hire to hire to hire to.
And all of a sudden that's where the client's paying too much money. So my carpentry package is probably inflated by 20%, 30% because there's too many
people clipping,
layers. Too many clips. So I think if the industry does slow up a little bit and it's harder to get work, maybe we'll start to see some carpenters come on wages and that will start helping pricing.
Yeah. Would you be able to give a small example on trades reducing? Like, for example, we had huge floods back in, was it last January?
Yeah.
Plasterers and painters were charging around $1,800 plus GST to do a little hole patch up, two plaster, two paint. And then now we're getting them back for $55 an hour and it's coming around $550, $700.
Yeah.
Any examples like that?
Because
those are the ones that are like killing costs on jobs.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
It's
all good. I was just giving
I haven't seen it yet. But these rates need to start coming back from a loyalty point. Like, if you're a subby and you're not getting much work, drop your rates by 5 or 10% for someone that's going to employ you for weeks or months.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, go over. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping that will happen.
Okay.
Not for me to make more money.
Yeah.
Just so we can like get a few of these jobs over the line and start renovating.
It needs to, if you look at, you know, there's probably 10 to 15 subbies over a renovation. Yeah. If everyone can come back 5 to 10%.
Correct.
You might go from winning 2 jobs a month to 4.
That's going
to
help the whole industry.
Because you could reduce $100,000 in costs on a $1 million reno.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think like every industry is struggling for staff at the moment,
yeah,
across the board. I think in the building industry, we're not seeing a lot of apprentices coming through. So yeah, I'm really worried about the future.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to an old bricky. He would have been at that pub on Friday afternoon at Bonnie Doon, actually. And he was, I think he was 75, retired bricky. And he was talking about TAFEs, or they used to call them...
that's your trade school.
Yeah, your trade schools, which we don't have anymore. And it was before my time.
Yeah.
But that tech schools, sorry.
Tech schools, yeah.
And maybe we need to start getting more tech schools around the place, that for kids that...